We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Today is the rubber match, the Ali versus Frazier, Thriller in Manila, the third installment of Marco Perazzo and Tim Carpenter doing this podcast. Tim and Marco, if you don't listen to this podcast, are Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belts, school owners, and...
Conjoined twins,
yeah. Basically the same person. All right, this is tradition, I guess. We start this podcast by reading shit that Tim wrote.
It's always the best part of the podcast.
Yeah. So your birthday just passed. Mine and Marco's are coming up. I'm in August. What are you?
September. Yeah.
Is your birthday really September 11th?
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's a fine day.
Wow.
The worst days in history.
Yes. Back in 1972.
So you wrote on your birthday, "My birthday is approaching," you wrote. "I hate birthdays, but I enjoy getting older. Each year as I step closer to the abyss, the moments become more critical. The least critical of these moments is the celebration of my birth. I have a hard time celebrating my birthday. It insults my intelligence. I have no recollection of that day. I have no affection for it. I suppose it was a big day for my parents, but being the youngest of four, all right, just so people know, the ink on my printer ran out, and I have really trouble reading this. I was the youngest of four, so I imagine it was anticlimactic for them, too. Birth and death are pretty much always the same. It's easy. You don't have much choice of how you come or how you go. Between beginning and the end is where you have a say in the matter. That's the hard part. There's nothing special about being born. It happens to most of us. All that matters is what you do before you go." All right, so you dismiss your birthday as a legitimate holiday. What are your views on holidays in general, Tim?
I think what I did was I said every holiday was my favorite holiday. I thought I did that, but then it ends up being...
I thought there was sarcasm in that,
yeah.
You know?
But yeah, I don't like celebrations usually.
So if you don't celebrate specific days, won't time just slip by?
No.
And then you never get a chance to reflect and look back. And
time's slipping by anyway. Celebrating a birthday or Christmas isn't going to change that.
How do you, if you look back at your life, what are the things that mark time, the passing of time? Imagine getting your black belt, you remember?
Not really. I don't really remember that day too well.
What do you remember? You know, you don't look back into the past?
I try not to. Do you?
So you're not sentimental, is what it sounds like.
I get sentimental once in a while, but...
To get a sense of, like...
Yeah, it's a weird question.
Time, to get a sense of your life. You have to have a... Who are you now? Aren't you, like, the collection of all the things that happened before? And so that, you know, sometimes you have to think about, like... You'll think about some, like, an old girlfriend or...
Oh,
or
yeah,
like
I think about that stuff
going
all
to high
time.
School or
I think about, yeah.
Not when you're jerking out. I mean, just...
just no, I think about that stuff all the time, but it's... There's nothing to celebrate.
Right.
Like, I reflect on things.
Okay.
I reflect on...
Just randomly.
Yeah, my first girlfriend, my last girlfriend.
And what sparks those reflections? Just random...
Yeah.
But see, that's the point of holidays, is you sit down and you're like...
Is it?
I don't know. You get together with friends.
Is that what you do
on... Well, when you see, like, old friends, when you see Marco's face...
Whoa.
What doesn't it spark thoughts of things that happened in the past?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, like Wednesday.
Yeah, but none of them are holidays.
Okay.
That's the thing. Like, right, nothing. This is the thing.
Birthday. All right, let's do birthdays.
I don't
birthday
remember
is more
a single birthday. I remember my 21st birthday. Like, my friends took me out to bars and shit, and I don't like bars and I don't drink. I didn't really drink at all at the time.
Yeah.
I barely drink now, but I think I had one shot. Some chick bought me, and that was it. It was like the worst night of my life. It wasn't
because there was nothing happened.
Yeah, it was.
So
dumb.
You remember it because it was so bad, and you weren't expecting it to be something good.
I wasn't even expecting that. I didn't really want to go out. Just I felt like I should because it's your 21st birthday. It's like supposed to be cool, but
nothing happened.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Holidays are always the same. So what are you remembering? You're remembering last year we opened a bunch of presents under a tree. Next year we're going to open a bunch of presents under a tree. We're all going to get together, eat the same fucking food. Eat, you know what I mean? Get like what's
yeah, but
so
it's
great
a chance to do something with people like family or friends that you might not otherwise do because you're so busy doing other shit. Like you're doing busy like running your school.
Yeah.
The habits of
it. You say busy running your school?
Yeah, but I went and
saw my family. Yeah, I went and saw my family yesterday after running my school.
So it's not, okay.
Yeah.
So you don't get lost in your work or your,
oh,
or your women. So,
but I try to, every once in a while, I try to come out of it.
You don't need a holiday for that.
Nah, exactly. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Again, not answering for Tim, but like looking at his life, he's kind of not lived a life very far from the people he wants to be around on a regular basis. You know what I'm saying? So he doesn't need holidays. So it seems like it anyway. Doesn't need holidays to rekindle any kind of lost era or emotion.
I never had like a real career or job that, like, I'm always around my friends and I'm close to my family. I can see them pretty much, you know. So it's not.
Yeah, but you're also a recluse.
Yeah.
But naturally, so it's possible for you to disappear.
Yeah.
Off the face
like,
of the earth.
Like I said, I come out every once in a while.
Okay. Mark, are you on the same school of thought?
No, I mean, like for me, it's, you know, family is super important. I get to see my mom as much as I really want. Now that my brother's back in the fold, I get to see him pretty often, which is really cool. But holidays are for kids. And I mean that in a good way. You know, especially when you have kids, you know, it's so that they build memories of you, what you did, how you kind of made that kind of stuff special. So from that standpoint, I really appreciate more like birthdays and Christmas and that kind of thing, like the bigger holidays, just because you like seeing the look on the kid's face when he opens a present or gets a piece of cake or, you know, something, you know, your son or daughter come home and the house wasn't decorated and now it is. And they're looking around like, oh man, there's Mickey. I love Mickey. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like stuff like that. So for me, the nostalgia becomes putting myself where they are, saying, wow, at some point in my life, that wonderment, I had that wonderment. You know, so that's pretty cool for me.
Yeah, so you get to holidays when you get to watch your kids.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's like I don't care about my birthday. Like if I never get a happy birthday or a card, or it's not a big deal for me.
Do you care if, like, if your birthday comes and goes and no one says happy birthday, Lex, no one on Facebook, no one in real life.
I don't care.
How would you feel?
Yeah.
That's because I'm a loner.
And your family, where does your family live?
They live like a mile away.
Oh, from here?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were from somewhere else.
From Russia.
And that is somewhere
Russia's
else.
Russia's only a mile away, dude.
Oh, okay. I
can see it from my house.
Yeah, I didn't realize that your parents were that close.
No, they're right by Balance, actually.
Oh, okay.
My other friend that has kids, he said the same exact thing. I was talking to him last night and he said, it's like when you see your kid do something, it like takes you back in time to when you did that. So it's like he has to re-experience all this stuff.
Right. Yeah. And for me, it's like kind of cool to be in the same shoes that my dad was in. You know, just like I'm able to provide for my family. My dad provided for me, you know, passing that down and kind of being able to get them gifts and, you know, try to be the best dad you could be and all that good stuff. And appreciate, you know, that kind of stuff makes me appreciate sacrifices he made. For sure, you know.
So it's kind of weird that. So your kids probably don't care about their birthdays. So it's more like for you.
Yeah, well, no, my kids, I think they care, like, you know.
But they forget probably.
I don't remember my second birthday. I assume there was a party. There's probably pictures of it.
That's ridiculous. A fucking first and second birthday
party. It's really just so that your friends can tell you how great your kids are.
Right.
Yeah, you know. But then when they're like 2 or 3. 4 or 5, it's really cool because you get people come over and maybe your kids don't get to see these people in the family very much, or they get some extra special attention, which is nice for them.
All right, so don't know how to transition to it, so we're just going to go there. Tim Spriggs, the Lloyd Irving guy from, I think, Crazy 88. I'm not sure where he's from. So he's, if you ever watch him compete, he goes, he's one of the most aggressive competitors out there. I like watching him go because he's a heavyweight division, and he just goes, like, berserk. Like, when you talk about, like...
It's like Jacare, kind of.
Yeah.
So yeah, he does his weight and then the open, too, right? He's one of those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And he doesn't... If you want to talk about, like, old-school jiu-jitsu, that's what he does. Goes hard on the feet, takes you down, passes like immediately, really hard, mount, choke from out.
Nice.
Or take the back and just like brute like
basics.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the way it should be done, right?
So
when it's done well.
Pure aggression. So he wrote he writes some controversial shit. Recently a lot of people left Lloyd Irvin because of the controversy with people who were accused of rape.
And they were acquitted. Because that's an important thing to distinguish, is that you can't say these guys were accused of rape and then leave it, because that in the minds of everybody that might hear
right
this.
Right or wrong, like whatever, like cards were called in and favors or whatever, if any of that stuff happened, regardless, these guys had their day in court and they were found acquitted, not guilty. I don't know what the difference is. I think it's
the same thing.
And it often happens that people do commit rape and they are acquitted.
Right.
And it's sometimes, I think it's.
Right. And Lloyd Irvin himself, back then, he was found not guilty of.
Yeah. Right. Again, he was witness to a rape. I guess he was present for the rape.
Right, yeah, which is fucked up.
Some guys did go to jail
for that, right? Yeah. So I guess the state didn't do a good enough job beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a lot of times is the guy.
Well, maybe they didn't rape the girl.
I was talking about this today. I was on a jury, and look, you could just, the guy wasn't, you know what I'm saying? He wasn't going to church on Sundays. But the state didn't do a good job of proving that he committed this crime.
Yeah.
You know, so what are you going to do? You can't, like, just because you have a feeling that this person may or may not, you know, it's just like, yo, he's a bad guy. Maybe we're better off getting him off the streets, but that's not what you're there for as a jury or a judge. You're there to pass judgment on the facts as they're laid out. Again, so we're clear, I do not condone rape or even putting yourself in a situation as a man that can happen. Do you know what I'm saying? Where you can be accused of rape. Sometimes you need to be a little bit better in the choices that you make, that somebody could turn around and then accuse you of doing what you did.
I just watched a video actually about women in getting assaulted in the subway, and they were talking about how they're like, when they're wearing wearing short skirts and stuff, but that doesn't give you permission to assault.
Was that the one about assault, or was that the one where guys were just saying like, hey, what's up, baby?
Yeah.
And one girl said she was like,
yes, assaulted,
pushed.
Yes, pushed.
And the guy was jerking off.
Yeah.
I would say that's assault. But I think
I thought about that, man. I mean, this girl described the situation where she was pushed against the wall or like the train door or whatever, and the guy just stood behind her jerking off. But the way she described the situation, it kind of put me in the mind of the girl for a second. Like,
that's insane to think, because like, we're all like big, strong, tough guys, and we don't.
Two out of three.
We can't really we can't really put our heads in the self of a girl that's 100 pounds.
Yeah,
getting manhandled.
A guy that's like the size of us, that looks like he's like a big ogre, like staring at her. You know what I mean? Which is probably terrifying.
Right.
And what she said, which is like what really put me in the mindset. She said this. He gave her like a smirk.
Yeah, there's nothing she can do.
And like, everybody knows that smirk of like, I just did that.
I got away with it.
Yeah, I got away with it. Okay. So Tim Spriggs wrote a blog post about crianches, which is a word that I don't know if anyone still uses, but it's a word that means traitor, to represent a person who switches in jiu-jitsu, who switches teams, jumps teams based on his or her own convenience or whatever
factors, being recruited and all these other things.
One of the things he says, the quote, the fact that the number of crianches is, am I pronouncing correctly, by the way? I don't know, who gives a shit, okay. Is growing.
Criantes.
Criantes. Is growing at an alarming rate is bad enough, but the excuses they use for their treachery are almost just as bad. There are plenty of reasons I hear for being a crianche, which are all bullshit. But here are a couple that always seem to come up. One, that they don't pay me to train here, so I can go wherever I want. He gives some justification for that. And two, I need to leave to get to the next level. The last part I'll read. The worst part about being a crianche is at the end of the day, you end up never having a place to call home. Do you really think that your new team will fully trust you, especially after you've shown a history of disloyalty? Once a traitor, always a traitor. Most of the time when a competitor crianches once, he uses the verb, they crianche again. Criantes again. There's some high-level black belts out there that have been on at least 3 different teams. I know some fighters who never got promoted from the same instructor twice. With a track record like that, you'll never be fully trusted. You went through all the trouble joining a new academy only to not have the full trust of your team. That's pretty depressing to me. So on, he goes on. And the last line is, the bottom line is, Crianchis always lose.
I'd like to ask Fernando Margarita Pontes how he's a loser, or guys like Mario Hase, who's a loser, or Kai Otera, if he's a loser, or the Mendez brothers, if they're losers, or Galvao, if they're losers. You know, that I look at that. My big issue with all this is these guys that they're talking about, and obvious, you know, the two big ones would be Keenan Cornelius and JT Torres.
Yeah.
So when they arrived at the team, they were accepted fully, correct?
Yes.
They were brought into the fold and celebrated.
And JT, I think, was a brown belt already.
And Keenan, so they were Crianchis coming in, you know? So they're reaping what they sow in to a certain degree. You know, these guys left a team to come to your team. Now they left your team to go to another team. Mm-hmm. Right. So what can you bitch about? I could see like Tim Spriggs is down. Seems like he's been there since day one. I applaud that. I've been with, you know, my instructor since day one too. I get it. But you can't, at least I don't think, you know, he's got very slippery footing to be standing on based upon throwing darts at guys that already came in under circumstances where they could have been called Crianchis for being there, but they were fully accepted and celebrated for being Crianchis at Lloyd's. It's okay if you leave another team and go to Lloyd's, but it's not okay when you leave Lloyd's to go to another team is basically what he's saying.
His opposition is a little ridiculous, but say, is Tim Spriggs allowed to leave Lloyd Irwin?
I think anybody's allowed to leave anywhere.
Not allowed, but is it a good idea?
I don't think so, no, because it works for Tim Spriggs.
Well, it worked for him until the brown belt. Isn't the logic... It's a tricky...
What was occurring is what it seemed like is they were building a team of killer black belts. Do you know what I'm saying? Of guys that were, you know, sharpening their sword, so to speak, with each other. Mm-hmm. And who, you know, in another year or two, all the other guys that they were pulling up with them were going to be pushing those black belts. You know, and you're going to see that Lloyd's team is going to be, you know, back at the points totals, if not already, soon enough. With the black belts are going to be promoting and the young kids and keeping it in-house rather than kind of accepting a lot of guys from other teams and that kind of thing.
If you were in the place of Tim Spriggs or JT Torres, would you jump around? So the more specifically, I want to – that feeling of never having a place to call home.
I personally, no. You know, like say if I were – me being like me with the talent level and the upside of a JT Torres or Tim Spriggs, I might be thinking about that differently. Do you know what I'm saying? Because maybe I'll let these things get into my mind where I do need to go to these places to take it to the next level because I have that single-minded goal of becoming a world champion. And if I train with Andre Galvao, he's won it. A lot of guys he's trained with have placed or won it. He comes from that kind of black belt culture of winning it. Through Alliance to TT to Atos and, you know, the access to the Mendez brothers and all that other stuff.
Isn't that perfect logic right there? It seems a little unhealthy to have a relationship with your instructor where there's this kind of idea that you owe them anything beyond the friendship that you have.
Right. Like, I mean, it's difficult if we're looking at it as athletes or are we looking at it as martial artists? As martial artists, you know? So there's the difference. Like, I've never been an elite level athlete. So.
You're on your way there.
Hang in there,
kid. You're almost there. What are you, 179?
179.2. But as a martial artist, I appreciate what my guys, my team, my training partners have done for me outside of the training to make me who I am today. So that's where, like, there's where I understand. But then you can't put Keenan and JT and a couple of some of those other guys that left at Jordan Schultz because they didn't come up from white belt. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, when I started, Tim was, you know, I think it was a blue belt. He came as a white belt. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's different. You see guys come up, the relationships, the fabric of that relationship is a much different one.
You can even compare it to just relationship with a woman. I mean, you don't owe, just because you've been together for 10 years, if you found somebody who's better.
Right. Especially as if you want to be a world champion, you only do the things that make you a world champion. So if you feel in your heart that where you are can't get you to be a world champion and this other place can, then it's an easy decision.
And I just don't see why that's looked down upon. That's completely, perfectly okay in most sports.
It is, but at the same time, like in wrestling, if a guy switches schools, you know the guys at, like, who was the guy? Steve Mako.
Yeah.
So he left from Iowa to
Oklahoma.
So that happens at collegiate wrestling for sure.
But I guarantee you that guys were like, fuck him, man.
Right,
but,
right. Yeah,
depends on what circumstance it happens. But yeah, there is another cultish sport, which is wrestling at NCAA.
But that's because it's such an intense and intimate sport. You develop such crazy bonds with people that, like, when you're...
What did Kyle say? What was the coach that at the Olympic Training Center that coaches at Iowa now?
Brands.
He's like, Terry Brands made me thought he's the only guy that can make me win.
Yeah, he said when he got offered a coaching job, and he's like, he said to himself, how am I going to win if he's not my coach? He, like, really thought, he didn't understand that he could win. From what I understand about this kind of stuff is that that's what it takes to get somebody to be the best in the world. You know what I mean?
That kind of belief.
That kind of belief in what your coach is telling you. Because if you believe everything he says will work, then it will. It's the same. Like if you go into a match thinking you're going to win, odds are you're going to win. Maybe. If you go into a match thinking you're going to lose, you're going to lose.
Another variable here. It's the variable is, well, if you're at a school, right, and you want to be an IBJJF world champion, right, and you come up to the school and you compete and you're doing pretty well, but you're like, man, I know I could do pretty well up to like blue or purple, but my school is kind of, you know, it's soft. It's a nice school. I love the guys I train with, but it's kind of more, you know, it's a little self-defense. It's a, you know, it's a club. It's guys that are part-time guys. Then, you know, like I can understand that. But what I would hope is kind of the model where you could approach an instructor or a coach and say, hey, I still want to help you build what you have here because I appreciate the last 5 years, but I need to go here on these certain days or do this with these certain people to be able to kind of achieve the goals that I want to achieve.
But then it becomes unrealistic, right? So that's Gianni Grippo is a good example that he was with Henzo.
Right.
And he went to Marcelo, which you're moving from one killer gym to another strictly because Marcelo's school was more focused on BJJF competition.
Sure. We can't say that Henzo's school is soft. We're not.
No, exactly. They're killers there.
Yeah, yeah.
So the idea is that you're really purely making a rational decision. And Grippo was brought up from being a little kid.
Youngster.
I mean, I don't see why that.
Well, you'll see it. Like guys, MMA fighters talk about it. Like you have the super gyms, the super camps, right? And we've talked about this before. And guys go to super camps and some of them do really well, but other guys don't do so well at the super camp because it's too difficult. The training's too hard. You get, you know, the incidence of injury is too high, right? But what they'll do is they'll stay at their home camp, right? With the guys that their coaches that can really focus on them. Right? Because if you're a mid-level guy and you go to American Top Team, you're not going to be talking to the highest level coaches. Right. But if you're at your smaller place, your coaches are giving you a lot of attention. And then he's like, yeah, I need to go down to Florida for 2 weeks to, you know, sharpen the sword with those guys. And then I come back and finish my camp. I don't know if that's as easy to do in jiu-jitsu. I don't think it is because you need that kind of that pressure cooker all the time, I think.
But even that move to, you know, going to Miami every other week to train or something
that. For like 2 weeks out of an 8 week camp or something.
And you
like
post
that.
Pictures on Facebook of yourself training. Right. That's gonna, in the jiu-jitsu community, you're gonna be seen as a traitor a little bit.
I mean, depends on how your coaches, how they spin it. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, how often do you see the top level athletes jump around gyms?
Well, I mean, look, we could just look at a couple guys right now, right? So they're not. I don't like Zach Mikoski's in Montreal training at TriStar, he's here, he trains at Will Martinez's school. Right.
But he's a fighter. Like MMA guys, I'm much better with that.
Yeah, yeah. Using that. That's the so maybe we need to look at that a little bit more. But the flip side of that is how many jiu-jitsu schools are just going to open up their school for 2 weeks and let you?
Well, that's kind of weird that they don't, though.
Yeah, right? Well, right. But that's again a culture thing.
It's sick. I have to. I still get upset that I have to pay $40 or whatever it is for a mat fee at every freaking jiu-jitsu school
why,
I go to.
Why is that?
It's because that's a mat fee.
That's how a guy makes his living.
Okay, so this is a question I have for you. Do you think that's a good idea to pay ask for a ridiculous mat fee from a visitor?
100%.
Because you don't want visitors.
Well, but that's a business. So that's a business statement, mm-hmm. and it makes perfect sense.
So what I will do is, anybody comes to visit my school, the first time it's on the house. Right. You come, you're out of town. First time you come to visit, that's fine. The next time you got to pay a mat fee.
I understand that system and I exist in it, but first of all, it's pretty rare that a person would say first one is on the house.
Okay.
And it just, let's be honest, it's not very welcoming is what I'm saying. I guess there's a feeling, it's not just about money, but there's a feeling, forget money. There's a feeling like you're not welcome.
You're not.
A little bit, like a tiny.
No, it's not that you're not welcome, but there's it's like, hey, I'm in Phoenix and I want to go to the movies.
Yeah.
The movie theater owner does not care that I'm visiting and that they're not being welcoming to me, because he's in business to teach people, or not to show movies.
Yeah.
Right? So he charges me.
Yeah.
I'm in business to teach jiu-jitsu. So why, visitor or not, why shouldn't I get paid? It would be the same thing as saying students shouldn't pay.
So
that's not welcoming. But
we're using the same. So if you use that logic, then Crianci is a non-concept. Because if you're paying, you're being a service. The martial arts community.
The thing. Well, that's what I think he says that in there. Crianchis are the guys that don't pay. I think he said that in the article. He's like, they're, and that's, but that's one of the main, that's, yeah. If he didn't say, that's what Carlson had said, or all these.
It's the guys you do the most for. Yes, and you exactly. charge the least, that fuck you over.
It's the guys that you don't charge to pay. You let come into your gym. Right. You take them under your wing. You show them.
You corner them in fights. And
the Crianci thing is really, it's a dude being fucking. Soft about like he's like I really wanted that guy to be mine,
right?
Yeah.
And then he goes because you know you thought he was closer to you than he was. That's what it is. It's a guy. It's just anger, but it's like you said. If you think about it logically, it's if you want to be a world champion, you got to do what you got to do, and that's fucking everything you're doing.
I can respect
what you want to do.
You know what I'm saying? Like I was like, hey man, you know if that's your thing, you don't think it can happen here. I happen to disagree with you, but
you're an idiot. Yeah,
yeah. You know, and it's kind of like. Well, we were trying to build something and you were a piece of that, of building it, you know, but man, if you're on the cusp and training at Atos or Alliance or with Marcelo Garcia is going to take you over the top, man, go for it.
Some people think the grass is always greener. Some people think
it does always look greener on the outside. It's hard not to see that way.
So did we ever resolve what our feelings are on this?
I don't know. I agree with you guys 100% about the trader thing. It's the $40 mat fee that I'm fucking annoyed with.
But is that okay. Wait. So is that more to do with, I mean, not to blow it up, but like if you had a better financial situation, would it be that big of a deal? I don't, you know what I'm saying? Like,
but it's
the principle of it.
Well, so I go for three days, I go to a town. It's a complete disincentive for me to train.
Yes.
Because $40 is a lot of money.
Yes,
okay. I'm a little cheap. So even when I would have to be pretty fucking rich to be like just throwing $40 for
me. And it's designed to be a disincentive because what you don't want is people just showing up and paying for a class and turning around and leaving and then coming in the next time and paying because it becomes a culture of paying for classes. And that's not, you know, if you make the commodity that singular class, then you've taken out exactly what we're trying to build as martial arts.
But I wish there was like a system where you can prove that you're a visitor, like show a license from an outside state to say, hey, you're – because
– I tell all of my students when they go visit a school, I was like, ask what the mat fee is. If they don't charge you one, ask to buy a t-shirt. Show that you're not there.
Yeah, but if you're training there for a week, you're not going to be buying a t-shirt every day.
No, right? But
– buy one.
But you're not looking.
Yeah, but that's.
But you don't want.
I'm upset about $40, not $10.
This is what you're doing.
You don't want his freeloaders.
You know what you do when you go to? Because this is what I've felt like you have like. Because I've never paid a mat fee. I don't think.
Ah, okay.
But I would if someone's like, yeah, there's a mat fee.
But you show up as a black belt, and there's a class full of white belts, and you still have to pay a mat fee.
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and I don't think most schools would do that for a black belt. Like if,
for not black belt, but they.
But this is the other thing. You don't know who the motherfucker is coming into your school. Right.
But there's, yeah, there's got to be a system.
You could come in. Okay. How about this? A guy like you, big scary Russian dude, comes in, rips off three guys' feet, and they're out for 6 months, and they're like, yo, my foot's broken. I'm not paying anymore.
Yeah.
So for your $40, he just lost $1,000.
Well, that
a student for life.
That means
that kid got scared off because new guy that was kind of soft and not ready for a dude like you to come in.
The $40 is not going to scare off a scary Russian dude.
It does
seem like
no.
Did you pay anyway? Did you pay the $40?
Well, yeah, I did like once, but I don't go as much, right. And I don't feel okay. It's not even about the money. It's you don't feel welcome.
But that's the dude. You got what you don't understand. Jiu-jitsu is not a fucking. It's not a game or a sport. It's you're learning how to fight. Even when you're doing the sport, it's supposed to mimic a fight. That's what the sport is.
Yeah, but
and the $40 is a mugging. He's mugging you ahead of time.
Yeah.
Like you're learning how to fuck people up, and when you're practicing fucking people up.
Yeah,
so when you go into a school, it's a stranger coming in. So when we train at Bounds, we know how hard we're gonna go. Like we can adjust it, and we know. When you have some stranger coming in, he might be really good. He might suck. He might be a total psycho, and he could come in and hurt people. It's unfriendly because there's a stranger coming into your close knit.
Okay, so your reaction to when you see a stranger is, I need to fuck him up and charge him and mug him for $40. My reaction would be like, well, let me first learn something from the stranger.
What am I going to learn from him?
He comes from probably another place,
time. Well, that's what I mean.
And he has some
and he paid me, and I can learn from him. Awesome.
No. He has a different style that brings.
I'll talk
in
to him. I'll find out about him. I will get to. I'm not. Guy doesn't walk into school and I fuck him up.
Yeah.
But I'll talk to him and be like, what are you doing here? Where are you from? Like all that kind of stuff. Right. I'll get to know him a little bit and I'll always roll with him first. I'm not going to like let him go with a student, you know?
No, I know.
That's why I have my Sunday open mats at my school. It's open to anybody from anywhere. You like, I don't care.
It's a modern day Gracie challenge.
No, but seriously, like as long as you're, and, you know, I know who are active students in the community typically. So as long as you're an active student at any school in the area, you're welcome to come to my school on Sundays to train with whomever you want, you know?
But see, a guy visits from Japan.
Yeah.
Aren't you curious to learn?
No.
See, but this is the difference that, like, I feel like a martial artist, I mean.
I'm not curious enough to not charge him $40. My curiosity doesn't outweigh the fact that
you've grown cynical with age.
But if a guy comes – so if a guy – if Yuki Nakai comes in.
Uh-huh.
Different
he's
story.
Not fucking paying anything. I'd be like, yo, man, tell me about
– But there's a lot of guys like him who are not famous.
Right. Yeah,
and I don't care about them.
Okay. So like, they get to pay for
it. No, right. I'll talk to him. If the guy's like, oh, I'm a black belt. I was in the Olympics for judo. Hey, man, let me pick your brain. If he's like, yeah, I've been training for 2 years.
Yeah, if it's Ilias Iliadis and he's in Maple Shade,
yeah.
I'm not asking him for $40.
Yeah, but if it's
Lex Friedman.
Yeah. No, well, there's another – let's say he's a high-level
– Purple belt.
A brown belt who – almost getting a black belt.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's – like business is business, man. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
how the guy eats, man. Like, I can't.
Because it's
– Is
it's,
it really a good business decision to charge $40
yeah.
for a visitor?
Well, it's because if he doesn't give you the $40, he's not going to train. That's it. You know what I'm saying?
Why like, not give – like five, well, what? So what
– Well, what, why the, not? What? Him not training or him training doesn't add or detract. Do you know what I'm saying? It's just letting him know that if you want to train here, it's $40. This is our place. These are our rules. The first rule is give me money.
But you're not making much money off these.
No, because my cover
it's more
toes.
Of a, it's kind of a deterrent. You don't, because like I said, you don't want people just dropping
I had a
in
guy,
and training.
I had a guy,
yeah.
right?
It disrupts the class.
He came in everything. And he's. I was like, yeah, you know, the mat fee is going to be, it wasn't 40, but it was something. He goes, I've never had to pay a mat fee anywhere else. I go, that's cool. I didn't invite you. Yeah. I don't know who you are. You're here with this guy as his guest. I go, he cuts one of my guys with a knee. Guy had to get stitches. And the guy's a douche. Do you know what I'm saying?
I
so.
And I mean, he, okay, take a risk with a visitor.
Nobody should be upset that people people are asking for money to do this. It shouldn't.
Don't complain about it's. There's a somebody said it. Some old quote. Don't complain about the price. Just have more money.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean?
Well, okay. So I probably also at the core of my complaint is that I have to pay as much as a white belt.
Well, all right. So was the
don't be a brown belt.
Be a high level black belt. Yeah,
right. Okay. So how solution. Was the training? So the real question is, was
it
the
wasn't
training
very, it wasn't
worth?
Near,
so that's different. So, but had you come back like, fuck, man, you know, I paid $40. It was expensive, but the training was badass.
You should have told the guy after, but yeah, man, you know, that really wasn't worth $40.
No, okay, that's, I guess, what my central complaint is the guy knows this is a class with three white belts and one blue belt.
Oh, is that what the class was?
Yeah.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah, but that's...
So he's trying, what he's scared of is you in his class. He's throwing the $40.
They were, so I wasn't talking to the main guy. I was talking to like... I emailed the main guy, mm-hmm. and they said, yeah, come in. And I was talking to, like, the secretary or whatever.
The helper.
The guy at the front. Whatever. They're just following a protocol. Right. They're not – they really don't.
He does what he's told.
Right. So how's the secretary supposed to know who Lex is?
Well, okay.
Because I sent him a link to my blog. You know? I was like, I read
– When you came on Thursday night for team practice, yeah. If somebody had stopped in to visit and I was like, yeah, we're getting ready to have team practice. It's going to be $40.
Yeah.
If you were that guy visiting, if what Thursday night had happened at that school, would you
I wouldn't be upset for $40. Right. I get a good workout. So yeah, if $40, if I'm like get my ass kicked, then
so
it's
you
great.
Were, you didn't get the value. That's the thing. Right. It's never the price. It's what are you getting
it's the
for
value.
Your money.
Yeah.
Because if
but I wouldn't pay $100 for that workout.
Would you pay $100?
Well, I wouldn't ask for $400. But you notice I didn't ask you to pay for that workout,
yeah.
Right? It's different.
You look bitter already. Yeah. It's,
yeah. I'm trying to find a deterrent for you.
Yeah.
But, you know, like going back to the Lloyd thing, those guys had a pretty good thing going there up until all this rape, you know, the rape thing happened. Because you had DJ Jackson, JT Torres, Jordan Schultz, Keenan Cornelius.
There's a bunch of like slightly lower
guys. But those young guys they got coming up are motherfuckers, man. Yeah.
There's killers there.
Yeah.
He's a great coach. Coach, it's like if you can separate the man from the coach.
What do you know about him that's so bad? All you know is what people say. You're judging a man on other people's opinions that they
don't know.
I love when Tim Carpenter defends Lloyd Irving. This is awesome.
I'll defend anybody that's being wrongfully like.
But here's the thing, is it cool like he's always been good to you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can't so if someone's good to me,
no. See, what you're doing now is you're defending communists in the McCarthy era.
All right, I'll do that. I don't care.
It's
the communists were good to me. I don't.
Yeah,
I don't give a fuck.
Exactly.
As Tim wonders, what was the McCarthy era?
John McCarthy. That was like the first three UFCs.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the guy we're talking about. All right. We never touch politics in this podcast for a good reason.
Well, actual politics.
Yeah, I guess we just talk politics for stupid politics. So the Israel-Palestine conflict just heated up in, I think, in July. So I wanted to get two people that probably don't know anything about the Israel-Palestine conflict.
I bet you we have better points than most people that
yes,
know,
because,
know about it.
Yes, because one thing not that biased. I like about you guys, you have good common sense.
So
what do you call that? The common sense muscle is pretty strong.
So when Hindustan became India and Pakistan, right? Mm-hmm. And they – no, seriously. When they forcefully migrated 100 million Muslims to this one area that was a major Hindu area. Well, it didn't do much for Hindu-Muslim relations in the new countries of Pakistan and India, right? So when they tried to do the same thing in what is now Israel,
yeah,
right? Is and I don't quite understand. I know it was the UN and then the British and all this other stuff.
Just
and
these, UN, yeah.
These unnatural forced states don't seem to work, right? And I don't understand the geopolitics of it more than what I just
but
said.
But especially when
there's
religion is involved.
When religion and there's a deep seems to be a deep seated hatred. I have just as many friends on Facebook that are pro Palestinian as they are pro Israel.
Yeah.
Right. And I read and what is sad to me is clearly. It seems like on both sides, there's hatred and a not very much value for even children on the other side. Even the children are enemies, and that's sad and scary.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know who's right, who's wrong. I don't know the history. I don't understand it. You know, somebody fucked up along the way when they decided to kind of make the state. You know, there maybe would have been a better way or whatever. But the part that really saddens me from being like a human but also a dad is that, you know, 2-, 3-, and 4-year-olds are hated as much as a 30-year-old with a rifle.
Yeah. This problem is intrinsic in how the state was created. And what the hell do you do now? is the question.
Stop watching the news.
Stop watching the
news. It's fucking depressing, man.
So part of the thing is one of the, if you ask most people, they don't really hear, they don't really care in America.
If you traveled internationally?
Yes.
Okay. So the typical American has no clue about what happens outside of their local, community and maybe their city.
Right.
You know, and you get outside of the United States and the newspapers are very internet, you know, like they have a much broader international sense. The news has a much broader international sense. So people are, have a much deeper understanding of what's going on internationally.
I don't think it's so much that people don't care. It's that the news that we get is so biased.
Right, they don't care because they don't have access to it.
It's not news. It's all propaganda. It's not – like all this is they know if they show dead babies on TV, people will watch and they know they can sell advertising. That's all it is. They know – I mean this shit's been going on since I was a little kid and then before that. It's been the exact same story over and over and over again. Every few years it flares up and they really focus on it because they know it's like they remake a sequel to a movie. It's the same thing. They know it's going to make money.
But there's a very simple solution.
Exactly how much people are going to watch and how much
I'm really curious, man.
Well, it's okay. There's a piece of land. I don't know the holy nature of it, like what the Bible says, what belongs to what. But there's Jerusalem and there's Israel, and then there's Gaza Strip and West Bank. The really simple solution is the two-state solution. You just divide up Israel the way
it was supposed to. With Jerusalem? Because Jerusalem historically has been a city that has been the epicenter of three faiths, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam.
Yeah, so the proposal that they've always had on the table, and they all –
Who's they?
Both Israel and Palestine, and they each put it on the table, and when the other one comes close to agreeing, they take it off. And there's this kind of a cat and mouse game, is to split. It's going to be the capital for both Palestine and Israel. There's
Jerusalem.
East Jerusalem and West Jerusalem.
So like Berlin.
Yeah. That seems like a rational solution.
That seems really fucking stupid. Like all this stuff about like you have one little piece of dirt. It's the same fucking dirt. And it's, this is too, what are you going to have? It's going to be like North Korea where they have like two guards facing each other on like opposite sides at all times. That's so stupid.
That's what it is.
But it's there's like that's not, I mean there is no solution. Let them do what they're gonna do.
Right, but I mean, look, I know that there's a part of American foreign policy that really relies on destabilization of areas and allowing these conflicts to go on so that one side never really becomes all too powerful.
Right, because we do supply Israel with most of their ammunition.
Right, and who supplies Hamas?
Hamas.
Probably us,
the
too.
Since right, well, no, through a different, maybe the Iranians or wherever, you know, like we, or the Saudis or somebody, you know, the Turks. So one way or another, we're financing or arming some sides or in a roundabout way. So, yeah, man, it would be easy. If it sounds like a decent enough solution. All right, we have two states. They're autonomous and they're peaceful.
Send them a letter.
No, everyone knows this.
Get a
this
printer. Get a better printer, though.
So that's the thing. You got to have some people smarter than all three of us working on this.
Probably no. No, you don't.
There's people smarter than us looking at this and trying to find a solution.
Right.
The problem is the people that are involved in it are fucking retarded.
So this,
like, they're like,
yeah, but the people that are involved in it hate it. We hate each other.
Right. They're just so small.
How are we
going
to come to a fucking agreement? That's the thing. Is like, I intrinsically hate you. You intrinsically hate me for no other reason other than
you're
the fact
smart enough to, you could hate somebody and still sit next to them. If you were like, if it would benefit you, you could do business with them. Even if you hate them.
No, but see, here's, like right hatred. Now. I don't understand this. So I hope I'm not speaking, stupid things here, but there's a very strong hatred of Jewish people. That's the one side. The other side is Israel does a lot of terrible things in the form of killing children against Palestine, but it's not hatred. It's cold military actions. So those are the two sides, because Palestine has 50% unemployment.
So which is worse, doing something out of like
emotional hatred?
Because people are invading your land, or you feel people are invading your land, or doing something cold and calculated. I'm going to kill these
kids.
Well,
that's the hard question. You know what I mean? I mean, they're both.
Like, which side is the bad guys?
It's so, yeah. Well,
how about that? How about we figure out who the real bad guy is and we get rid of him? How about that? That's where you need to have the smart people look at it and look at it logically. Like, who's the bad guys here?
Right, but it's all perspective. You know, Hamas is saying we're shooting rockets at people that aren't letting goods come in. They're choking us off. They're letting sewage, they're not letting us fix our sewage system. They're not letting us educate our kids, you know. So we're freedom fighters. That's their argument. We're fighting for our freedom. We're not just out there killing Jews. And the Jews are saying, well, we're protecting what we have. They're saying this is ours. This is historic. Or, you know, I guess the argument has historically been ours. But I don't know enough about the history of it to kind of say. But it's fucked up that humans to this day still have to throw rockets at each other.
But that's not even the worst thing going on in the world. That's like the least worst thing that's going on.
In terms of
how many people have died in like the last 10 years there.
Well,
I'm sure there's some stat.
This is probably a small number relative
to... Look on your brand new Nook.
Probably not as much as have died in like Africa and stuff, you know?
Yeah, Africa, China. There's a lot of... Like Syria is like 10 times.
Yeah.
It's a very small piece of land with people that... I mean...
With no real value other than... There's no oil there.
That's what if there is something there that's worth something?
Well,
that's what they've been fighting over.
Well, that's the place God is watching.
Right. Doesn't seem like it. Maybe is the Ark. Where's the Ark of the Covenant?
That was in Iraq. That's why we went there.
Oh.
Between the Tigris and the Euphrates.
All right.
Mesopotamia.
That's the real reason.
Cradle of civilization.
And Palestine is broke as hell. So annual budget for Israel is $45 billion. Palestine is $1 billion.
How much money does Israel's government get from the United States?
That's the weird thing, right? Is they're just incredibly well funded.
And that's the other thing. So you have a super well-funded – if they were going to choose a place to make a Jewish state, why the fuck would they put it in the middle of a bunch of people that hate them?
Because they want to destabilize the area so that that area doesn't become too powerful.
Well, that's why Israel is supported. Israel's the logic that America uses to support Israel. Yes.
Okay. Right. You know, it's so that the Iranians, the Turks – who else? The Libyans?
Well, then let's get rid of the army base that's in Gaza.
No, but then these other, and from a U.S. kind of positional power standpoint.
Yeah.
I've recently gotten into a relationship. And I've been...
Very attractive girl, by the way, for all the listeners.
Who's that?
Thank you.
What were we talking about?
His girlfriend.
Relationship.
We're going to do a conversation about your girlfriend?
No, I'm going to relate it really back. I'm trying to compare it to the Israel-Palestine conflict. Because there's no...
Is there tunnels?
We know who you are.
What do you mean?
You're Israel.
Yeah, that's true.
You have all the technology, all the power.
All the power, yeah.
All the metals, all the gold. All the gold, all the diamonds.
I'm well-funded.
Some rebel running around throwing rocks.
So tanks.
With no hope.
In that fight when there's two people with their irrational demands and hatred on one side, what's the solution? When there's, million, people... full of dislike for you in the case of Israel. Like how do you come to a resolution?
It's going to be very difficult to go out there and do a roadshow to change a billion people's minds about them liking the Jews in Israel. Right? So it seems like Israel is doing the correct thing by defending their territory and standing strong and not caring and staying, because they could have left at any time, right? They could have just decided, hey, this is too, this isn't worth it. We're out of here.
The right thing to do would be for them to leave. They would be like, you're in a place that everyone around you fucking hates you and wants to kill you, and your presence there.
You're asking people to leave their home.
Which isn't that what Israel is doing to the people that were there before?
Yeah, but this happened a while ago. So like, there's now a new generation. And that
doesn't know any different.
Yeah, that's their. This is their home.
Yeah, it's. There's no answer.
The answer is to let them go and see who comes out on top.
Well, first of all,
and they're
neither is coming out on top because there's a lot of Israel lives in fear. There's bombings all the time.
Man, I've never met an Israeli that I've ever thought was in fear of anything. There's some fucking...
There's some they're vicious dudes.
Yeah. No, because... Well, that comes from... what was that? Some book wrote about it where if you if you live in an area where there's bombs nearby, you get used to, you
become desensitized.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is super intense situations.
Yeah. But so they're tough dudes, but that doesn't mean they don't live in fear. Like there's, I was talking to a friend of mine that moved, used to be in Philly. As a judoka. She moved to Israel. And she's like, hold on a second on GChat. She's like, hold on a second. There's sirens going off.
And they had to go to the bomb shelter.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, okay. And she came back an hour later. It's like, oh, good. It was nothing.
A friend of mine's daughter was going to university in, I think it was Tel Aviv. And he would talk to her every day. And he's like, what's like? Oh, he's like, for every three dorm rooms, one of them is a bomb shelter. So when they hear the sirens, they know that, okay, the two other apartments just come into this apartment. They shut the door, they pull the blinds down and then they wait till it's safe. And it's just part of their daily living.
Yeah, I think there's the best solution would be to let nature take its course is if like whoever's funding, whoever, just everybody just pulls out, lets them figure it out. And then
first of all, you mean the best solution for Tim Carver, for like the US?
For everyone.
Not for them.
For everyone involved.
For them, for Israel, for Palestine.
Whoever's going to win is going to win. It's the best thing.
You're saying stop funding all of the participants, give them no more money, take all of their weapons back. Screw it. Let's just do blood sport. We'll get a fighter from each country.
Get out of it and let's see who
– So we're not allowed to give weapons to Israel though.
Israel, anybody.
Why would we?
Unless money.
You have other motives.
Yeah, see, there's the other thing. Is the guys that
so then you have to go to, you have to get rid of all
the military industrial complex. Not going to let that happen.
Like, there's too much involved in that little thing to really fix it. It's not going to be fixed. Like I said, it makes too much money. If it gets bad enough, people will leave. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So it was the Brits. It was a British controlled area.
Yes.
And then
the
Brits abruptly left, right? They're like, and we're out of here.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
And then they were looking for a place for Jews to go.
Right. And they thought it was.
And so the Holocaust is a big thing.
Right.
Because basically Jews they wanted a homeland.
Right. And Israel was the homeland until.
Like historically speaking, I guess.
But it had been a while, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had read some stuff that they were looking at setting up the Jewish state in Somalia. Is it Somalia? No.
What the fuck is wrong with – why wouldn't they choose Aruba?
No.
They meant like Tennessee.
It wasn't Somalia. It was somewhere else. Where's Haile Selassie from? Is he from Somalia? Ethiopia.
Ethiopia.
That's what they were talking
about. That's where all the good runners are from, right?
Right. And for some reason, there was like some sort of backdoor deal. Had the Germans won the war – they were – or had the Italian – because
that's where the Ark of the Covenant is in Ethiopia.
I don't know.
Because there's a bunch of – there's a I heard some guy talk about it. So there's a bunch of like –
We've lost so much steam on this.
Ark of the Covenant in – what did you say? Egypt?
Ethiopia.
Yeah, that's it.
Do you have any water?
Yeah, can I give you a cup of tap water?
I'll wait.
All right. I have some bottled water, but can I pour it in the cup?
As long as you don't turn on the spigot, yeah.
While we're on the subject of a conflict that will never be resolved.
we resolved that conflict. That's why we're here.
So you and I, me, Lex, and Marco had a conflict over Facebook chat. It didn't actually get that heated. I read it back. I'm like, oh, I actually realized that I misunderstood some stuff. So
I accept your apology.
No. There's no apology. So what happened is I wrote a long message saying, hey, fellas, I just started listening to the podcast. Here's the first 40 minutes. I basically sent you guys the previous podcast we did, and I got no response. I said, Marco, seriously, please do let me know if it is okay. And then you wrote, yes, fine. Been busy listening to the Ito Portal.
But there's backstory to
okay.
That.
Okay. I'll actually remove that. Well, you're the one that said Ito Portal.
Right. But the backstory was that you bumped us to do the Ito. You were like, I got to get this Ito Portal thing.
Yeah, I bumped.
So I threw that dart at you to fuck with you.
And you said, are we getting bumped again for Alvaro Romano?
Right.
Who's that?
He's the Ginástica Natural guy. He's another he's another movement douche.
And then I wrote, stop busting my balls. It may be how you express love, but in this case, it comes off as rude. I work hard on this thing. I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been nothing but respectful to you. Which is an ass. Which is basically me saying "fuck you" in a polite way. Mm-hmm.
And then my response back was.
So at this point, I either say sorry or fuck off. Which do you prefer? So I saw that message and I sat in it for I don't know a couple hours. I needed to phrase this correctly, so I was like, on the basic human level, I always prefer sorry. That's me trying to be respectful. And you said sorry, which is basically a win for me. I'm going to count
it. But, it's a win for you, but it's a win you asked for. You know what I'm saying? Like, I gave you an – it's like, all right, so do you want A or do you want
no,
B?
No, but you could have won really big there by saying, I'm sorry, fuck you. And then you just –
because it's just like, hey, do you want me to say sorry or do you want me to say fuck off? Whatever you need, darling.
And then you went on – okay. And I said, sorry as well. We're good. And then we talked on the phone.
And then we actually got off of the computer and I spoke to you and said, I have a lot of
That's the problem, man. Like,
you can never understand intent. You know,
intent
like,
on, digital.
Right. A smiley face. And I was being a prick, but to somebody that I like. You know what I'm saying?
And there's comedy. Like, when I read it back, that's you're being actually just funny.
Trying to be funny.
Yeah. And yeah, but
you know, like, look, I respect the fact that you're sensitive about what you do to the degree that you're an artist at this, right? You know what I'm saying? Like,
he gets like that too. Don't let him fool you.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah.
When's the last time I got that way?
I don't remember. All right. It's been so many.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, I understand an artist's sensitivity to, you know, like the passion that you put behind it. I know this isn't easy. Well, these are easy.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you got people that are, you know, that are difficult to get and all this other stuff.
You
and
have to
you know,
do
I
the
spread,
research and stuff.
You had to do the research. And I was like, man, I got a lot of respect for what you do. And, you know, the jokes are just like, I'm fucking stoked anytime I could be on this thing, you know?
Yeah. But what, so what's your approach to, do you usually not talk to people on Facebook or email?
Depending on, you know, when I talk on Facebook or email, it's just like, I'm not very good at email. Like, Facebook is a little bit better. It's just like a text, you know? So it's like, I never take anything on Facebook personal.
Because nothing on Facebook is like...
Even a direct message real. Or whatever. Like, that's why I'll get on the phone and call somebody and say, yo, are we good? Like, what's going on here? You know, like, I could take this a couple ways. You know, now that I'm here on the phone, how are we going to... Like, how do we settle this, you know?
All right, dudes. Thanks for doing the podcast today.
You got it.
It was, as always, my pleasure.